and welcome to the Run the Day podcast. I'm your host, Nick Simmons. With me, as always, is Camila Lapre. Say hi, Cam.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the show.
Cam, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a beautiful day here in Eugene, Oregon.
We are coming at you from the Run Gum HQ in Eugene, Oregon. And here at Run Gum, our mission's twofold. It's to fuel and inspire you to make the most of your busy days. Of course, we fuel you with our revolutionary energy gum, but we also try to inspire you with the content that we create, whether it's on Instagram or Twitter, our emails, or our podcast. You know, we try to inspire you. And on this podcast, we'd like to interview people with incredible stories. And I don't think I've ever heard a more incredible story than the one you're about to hear, my interview with Gabe Grunewald. What'd you think, Cam?
It was unbelievable. You know, I'm so inspired by who she is, everything that she's fought through in the past to what she's fighting through today. It just inspires me so much. And I'm so excited for you guys to hear her story.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know Gabe, she is a professional runner and she's also a cancer survivor. Mm-hmm. And her story, I mean, whether she's on the track or doing, you know, half a dozen things, she's a woman of many talents. But what you're gonna hear in this interview is just her attitude. She's so positive and she approaches each day with a sense of gratitude and opportunity. And she doesn't feel sorry for herself, you know, whether she's battling cancer or battling girls down the home stretch, you know, in a mile, she just has this incredible fight.
Yeah. And that positivity has brought her in contact with so many cool people that are helping her in her foundation, you know, with Chip and Joanna Gaines of Fixer Upper, that they've helped her create a marathon and to raise money for these types of cancers that are very rare.
She does have a new foundation. It's called Brave Like Gabe, and it's raised a lot of money for rare cancers. Again, a woman of many talents. You guys are going to want to hear this whole interview. She is just such an incredible woman. But I won't tease it anymore. Let's jump right in. Here is Gabe Grunewald. All right, here she is. Assuming she's coming from Minnesota, Gabe Grunewald. Gabe, how are you?
I'm good, Nick.
Are you in Minnesota right now?
I am. I am in Minneapolis.
Oh, it's so beautiful there this time of year.
It really is. This is like the best time of year for just hanging out. And I think fall running is like my favorite time of year to be running. So yeah, I'm pretty excited to be here.
You're spoiled with trails out there. The land of, 10,000 lakes. And I think every one of them has a trail around them.
Yeah, totally. We are very blessed with lots of cool places to run. My husband is the trail explorer in this relationship. I am kind of a baby. I like to run on bike paths and tracks, you know, places where I can run fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'm trying to dabble in different surfaces as I get older. So it's always fun to, there's always something new to explore here. So absolutely. We like that.
Gabe, I'm so excited to talk with you. I've known you for almost a decade now, but it seemed like most of the time our paths crossed at weddings or track races.
Totally.
We've always had some other reason to stay focused, but what have you been up to? I mean, I haven't seen you in a year. You know, your story is so inspirational and it seems like it's really getting the attention that it deserves. And we'll get into that. But I just wanted to hear, you know, from you, what have you been up to the last year or so?
Yeah, the last year or so, just, you know, it's been busy living my life. Obviously, my health, my battle with cancer has continued and has unfortunately interrupted my running career a little bit more than I was hoping it would. So that has been something that I'm still committed to. But unfortunately, I've been missing a little bit from the track and racing scene this year, as have you. So we've been like, you and I have not crossed paths lately.
Do they even still hold track races if we're not there?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is it going to be okay without us? I don't know. I have been trying to, you know, diversify what I'm doing with my time just for a lot of different reasons. But probably the most notable thing that I've been working on this year is just my new foundation. Brave Like Gabe is like, you know, been my kind of project this year. Just we're working on getting the rare cancer awareness and working on raising funds for more research for lots of patients who are kind of in a similar situation to me. And also the other side of that is empowering all cancer survivors and through physical activity. That's been a huge part of my journey as a cancer survivor for almost, that'll be 10 years next year. So my cancer story and my running story have weaved together a lot. And there have obviously been a lot of challenges, but being a runner and having that outlet as a part of my life and has been really helpful. So I'm trying to share that with other patients. And so that's been really cool.
Both stories are so incredible. And I can't wait to jump into each. But to give our listeners some context who maybe haven't heard your story, I want to go back to when you were a kid growing up and how you got into running in the first place.
Yeah. So I grew up in small town Lakes Country, Minnesota. I'm pretty sure that the county that I'm from we boast the most lakes per by county in Minnesota. So I'm definitely from Lakes Country. I think so. Like I I've heard my town like talk about this. I'm from Perham and I'm from Ottertail County. So that's pretty exciting. I grew up in a town of about 3,000 people population wise. And I basically grew up trying a lot of different sports. I'm one of five kids in my family, and our dad, for sure, both of our parents are very encouraging of staying active and trying a lot of different sports, but particularly my dad. And I think I happened upon running pretty randomly. I would race, particularly my younger brother, who's closest in age to me. We would just like race to the middle school and back. And my parents are always having us do stupid stuff like that. So I knew I liked running, but I really tried like all different sports. And running was the one that I feel like just clicked for me the quickest. And I really enjoyed it. I liked the social aspect of hanging out with my friends and being outside. But I think that I had like a little bit of talent for it. And I liked the aspect of, it was kind of like, it was a team sport, but it was really kind of all on me to put in the work to get faster and improve. And I loved that about running, that you could really see those improvements from like week to week or season to season. So I found running to be really motivating and a good fit for my personality.
It's one of those unique sports where really whatever you put in is what you're going to get out. You know, you can't necessarily sit back and count on a team or
definitely.
It's a do or die situation every time you toe that line. And I guess you loved it because you found success from a really early age. You were actually a state champion in the 800, weren't you?
Yes. I was one time state champion.
And it
was,
it was
my, yeah, I know. Well, I was in we have two classes for track and field in Minnesota. So I was in the small schools, but it really, I still look back at that little accomplishment as probably one of the things I'm proudest of, because I would go to the state meet like, you know, like every year for cross country and track every year since I was in like eighth grade. So that's a lot of appearances and a lot of opportunities to run well. And I mean, I placed in the top five like pretty frequently, but I really wanted to win a state title. I felt like that was so important because I knew I wanted to run in college, but for whatever reason, I couldn't like put it together. And I never quite got to that like glory moment of, and I'm going to be the person who won multiple state titles or was setting like state records. But yeah, I somehow put it together in my last race of my last season. I managed to pull it off. And I think that was still like one of the best days of my life. Awesome. I was so happy.
You know, when you have a dream like that and you work for so many years on it, those memories just stick in there. You'll have them
totally.
Forever. There's nothing you can do to get rid of a feeling like that. And so you have that successful moment. Our college is just throwing money at you. Is it like Idaho? And Idaho is exactly the mecca of running. So I was winning state titles and people were like, who are you? And maybe you'd be lucky to walk on our team. Were you getting offers?
Right.
Were you shopping it around?
Yeah. So since I didn't, you know, I was like pretty good, but nothing like super special throughout those like, you know, earlier high school years. And I would say, maybe you can agree with this, but I think junior year is like the most important year to absolutely get on college's radars. And I had a really not great junior year. So I was actually looking, like, I was so not sure what my running was going to look like. I was kind of discouraged after my junior year because I took some steps backwards, I felt like. And so I was looking at, like, I knew I wanted to keep running, but the big offers were not coming in. And you know, like you did not run Division I, and I was actually looking at some Division III and Division II opportunities in like the Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota area. And that's what I was tentative to, you know, really try to go run for a Division I program. But I got to like maybe early in the spring of it was pretty late, honestly, to be committing to college. I had a hard time with this because I went on some visits and I just didn't have that moment where I was like, this is the right fit. This is where I should go. So I was running out of time. And then I finally called the University of Minnesota. I was super scared to get back in touch with them because I knew I would be a walk-on. And I just was like, I know they don't want me. I'm not good enough, but I still want to, I'm going to go and try. So it was really late in my senior year before I won that state title. And I decided to walk on for the Gophers. And I'm super glad that I did that.
Well, and they're super glad you did as well. They got pretty lucky there with a star walk.
And I still look back and just like, I'm just happy that came together. But I really needed that state title, even though I had already committed and I was already a walk-on. It gave me like a little boost that I needed to feel a little bit more confident going into freshman year with all the, you know, there were a lot of big names from girls from Minnesota and outside who, you know, were really legit high school runners who were running leading times in the nation. I wasn't quite on that level, but it just gave me something that I could stand on. I'm like, okay, I'm a state champion. I can be here. Like, this is going to be good for me. And I had a really good freshman year, and it just sort of, you know, had some improvements from there.
And you ultimately ended up being an All-American in the 1500, I believe.
Yes, I did. I had a winding journey, kind of like high school, actually, with my college career, where I was kind of like having, you know, mainly improvements, but sometimes I would take a step back and not be sure if I was like reaching the potential that I thought I had. And like, once again, last race of college, that's when I took second at NCAAs in the 1500. So there's something about the pressure of a deadline that I think must help me find another level. Well, because
it defines you as a true champion in the highest, you know, the highest do or die moment. You rise to the occasion when a lot of other athletes, you know, implode in those moments.
Oh man, I don't know about that, but I wait till the end of these careers to have like my moment of glory. And of course, you know, there's a lot of runners who have those moments of glories every single year. Mm-hmm. And my moments are kind of fewer and far between, but I'm still holding out that I'll have like one more of those as a pro, just my high school and college careers. I need one more.
You know, I don't want to flash forward too far because you're still right in the meat of your career. But when you're a retired old guy like me, those moments come when you have a pain-free 4-mile run in the morning. So I had one of those this morning. I was like, yes, I'm pain-free. That was awesome. Hey, I'm walking around at 10 mile per mile, you know, which is a far cry from what I used to do as a pro, but I'll take it, right? You got to find the wins where you can find them.
Absolutely. Small victories, you know, they should not go unnoticed or uncelebrated.
Well, and it's so funny, you know, it used to be that I couldn't get my blood up or get my adrenaline going for some of those races towards the end of my career. And now, you know, like just lacing up my shoes, I kind of get that adrenaline rush. And
excited.
I only run a couple days a week, but I get so excited for it, you know? I think I needed to get back to that place where I was just excited about training. Are you, you know, you've been running for so long. Where are you at in your career mentally, emotionally? Are you still excited about running professionally? Are you, you know, a little burnt out at times? Or how are you feeling about your pro career?
I mean, I am still excited. I think that my perspective has changed over the years. And of course, my relationship with running and racing overall has changed a lot. And that is largely because of my health situation. But there were definitely years where I look back at my pro career, even like before I had my cancer recurrence in 2016, where I don't know, like there were times when I was like frustrated with my lack of progress. And I felt like I just didn't, you know, I had those moments where motivation was harder to come by and it's harder to get excited. But I think, you know, running is like cyclical and everyone goes through like the ups and the downs. And right now for me, it's a little bit different because I used to take racing and running fast for granted, and even just like being healthy, even though I was like a 2-time cancer survivor during most of my pro career, but not dealing with cancer actively, you know, I felt like pretty normal runner, honestly. I did have the cancer story, but I wasn't dealing with it day to day. And since basically right after the 2016 Olympic trials, I've pretty much been dealing with my cancer recurrence since then. And it has been challenging. I have been able to do quite a bit of running, even though I've had a surgery and multiple treatments and just the, you know, a full schedule of things to try to get healthy. But I am very happy to get a run in on most days. But I will say that like, I really do still dream about getting to the starting line and seeing what I can do. It's in a different context than it used to be, but it's been tough. Like, I think I underestimated a little bit how hard, like, my training has been really inconsistent. That's just the nature of how it's been with different procedures where I have to take a little bit of time off and then I try to get back into it. And that has led, the inconsistency in my training has led to some frustrating injuries and untimely injuries that I don't really, most people think that cancer is my big struggle to get to the starting line. And it really isn't. Like at this present moment and over this, you know, the last few months, I've had some procedures, but really they haven't been things that have been making me feel tired or not letting me run. It's been more so like getting in, you know, like a few months of training and getting back into like doing speed work and hitting those different systems and also staying healthy. Yeah. So that's like my new struggle, and it's frustrating, but I'm just trying to be patient and be, you know, respectful of the situation I am in. It is it has been challenging, but I think I'm trying to learn from it. And I will still set my sights on a new target, a new race. And I still think I can run fast. I don't know what that means at this point in my career, but I do still have that fire to like get out there and see what I can do. So.
All right, we'll be right back for the conclusion of this interview. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Special thank you to Run Gum. Run Gum is an energy gum designed to help people make the most of their busy days. Created by a 2-time Olympian, Run Gum provides an immediate boost in energy and focus when you need it most. Helping people run the day since 2014. Learn more and start your trial at rungum.com.
So I'm going to take a moment to brag about you.
Okay.
Aside from winning that state title and being All-American, you're a pro runner for the Brooks Beast Track Club. You were fourth place at the Olympic Trials in 2012, and you're a U.S. indoor champion in 2014 at 3,000 meters. And that's just a small portion of the highlight reel that has been your pro career. And you so humbly said that the cancer wasn't playing a huge factor in some of those, but I can't believe that you were diagnosed in 2009 with adenoid cystic carcinoma. Am I saying that right?
Yep, that's right. You got it.
At a young age of 22, I don't want to push too hard here, but tell me, you know, you're just about to graduate, you're about to turn pro, and you get this diagnosis. What was going through your mind? I mean, it must have been a horrible, horrible day for you.
Yeah, it was tough. So that end of my college career there with the running and the cancer was really a very interesting time in my life. So that cancer diagnosis in 2009 came, that was just when I was starting the outdoor track season of my fifth year. And basically I had never heard of that cancer. I was in the best shape of my life. And I knew that once I got that call, I was at a track meet. Actually, I was supposed to run the 1500 the next day for the first time that season. And I knew that the season was going to end and I was going to have a surgery and I was probably going to have radiation treatment, which I did end up having. And I kind of like glossed over some of the other details of that diagnosis because it was overwhelming. So I just tried to focus on, you know, the immediate future as much as I could and just get through each step of that process, like one thing at a time. And so my season ended basically. So I ran a PR the next day.
With all that weighing on your shoulders, you ran a PR.
Yeah.
In the 15th.
Yeah. And that was the end of my season. And I knew, yeah, well, thank you. I think I just was like, man, what a waste of, I put in all this work and I'm not even going to get to finish this season. Like, what a bummer. I might as well like give it a shot and then I can kind of deal with everything else later. I knew it would be hard to get like a sixth year, a clock extension. But that's what I ended up getting. I got a clock extension and a medical red shirt to run my outdoor track season in 2010. So that ended up working out for me, but I didn't get that information till December of 2009. So I was really just hoping that was going to work out. And the 2010 season was like such a dream for me. I had focused so much of my energy and so many of my emotions into running again and just like really needed running as therapy during that time in my life. And I felt like I could get my life back on track if I could get back on track with running. And I had no idea what to expect once I actually did get to race. But I mean, it was like a dream season. That was the season where, I mean, I hadn't even qualified for NCAA outdoors individually ever before. And then I got second. I mean, I went from like a 422 1500 to 412 in that year. It really just like changed the game for my running. I can definitely thank cancer for giving me that motivation and some new sense of urgency in my life. So it was a very interesting year because it was obviously a horrible diagnosis. And some of the hardest things about it were things that I didn't even really want think about at the time, which was the fact that this is a rare, incurable disease. There essentially were no treatments that had been proven to work for it, and it has a really high rate of recurrence. But usually people are okay for 5 years after diagnosis. So my way of trying to get through my day-to-day life was to tell myself, like, okay, Gabe, like, this is bad, but you probably have 5 years to like live your life, and then you can worry about it after that, which worked at the time.
I guess when you're that young, 5 years sounds like a long time, but 5 years goes by in the blink of an eye. How did you get out of bed every day and pursue your goals knowing that, you know, your goals had a shelf life? You know, you had to accomplish the things that you wanted to accomplish because there was this ticking clock.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes it was motivating and sometimes it was overwhelming and I would just sort of push that out of my mind. But I felt really fortunate to even just have gotten through the initial diagnosis, and being able to still have running in my life was really a gift. And that is what I tried to focus on. Some days I was better at practicing gratitude rather than feeling just overwhelmed with a sense of uncertainty about my future. I've also just tried to stay hopeful that maybe if it did come back in the future, that it would be like a longer ways away and maybe they would have like figured out a treatment by then. So, you know, running was actually a really good distraction for me from thinking about it too much. I definitely had my moments of being worried about it, but running keeps you busy. And especially when you're a pro runner, as you probably remember, and it's always like the next race, the next workout, traveling here and there. It's a lifestyle that kept me like focused on the present moment. There's nothing like running to help you stay in the present moment and get through like one repeat at a time. So that I do think that helped me. But after those 5 years kind of were up, I definitely didn't have a great mental plan for how I was going to approach that next phase kind of. And there was no like that was kind of like just these random websites online. It's not like after 5 years, like it's for sure going to just appear all of a sudden, but it was definitely something that was, you know, a little bit more worrisome to me because that's just how I decided to frame it earlier as a survivor. So,
and it didn't reoccur 5 years later, but was it 6 or 7 years later you did have a recurrence?
Yes, like basically 7 years later. That was 2016.
Mm-hmm. How is that? I mean, you've already been through war and now you know that you're going back in. Like, tell me what that's like. It's got to be almost worse because you now know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely worse just because the seriousness of having the recurrence, a metastatic recurrence, is not good. And I also had known at that point that from what I had seen, there was a little bit more activity in terms of clinical trials for adenoid cystic carcinoma, but there still wasn't a cure. And it was definitely going to be a kind of off the beaten path in terms of how to treat it and how to manage it. You know, are definitely challenges with having any cancer. Having a rare cancer makes it a little bit more interesting, I think, just because just dealing with a cancer that hasn't had any clinical trials done on it until like mid-2000s is kind of overwhelming. So it was tough just because I knew that now I had what was categorized as stage 4 cancer and I needed to have a big surgery. And there was like even more uncertainty and sort of, I really felt like I didn't know. For the first time in my life, I was like, there was no, like, I really have no idea how this is going to go sort of situation. Like, I still felt good physically. Mentally, it has been much more of a challenge, I think. But it's really even more important for me to work on doing what I can day to day, taking the diagnosis and everything else, basically one day at a time, and trying to be hopeful, even though, like, there's very real challenges with what I'm facing.
I don't know how you go through the mentality of that as you're describing it. It just feels overwhelming. And obviously I'm not dealing with it. I guess there's some positives that can be taken away. And I've talked to some cancer survivors in the past that have said, when you have something like that hanging over your head, when you wake up each day, you are just so much more appreciative or awake to the opportunities that you have in a given day. Do you feel that ever? Like, you know, a sense of satisfaction or gratitude for each and every day that you are here on this wonderful planet?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, every day it's like, for me, it's a very real like gut check for the decisions that I'm making and I'm spending my time and just really focusing on things that are actually important to me and the people around me. It's very easy to like figure out what I need to say yes to and say no to. And I think that's definitely something that, you know, the immediacy of my situation has brought out. But yeah, I think what it really has made me focus on is like trying to just do my best with a very situation that's not ideal at all. And the main thing that, you know, motivates me on a daily basis is like, how can I inspire patients and who are in a similar situation to me? And is there a way that I can kind of use my story and my platform to improve the situation for rare cancer patients and work on getting a little bit more research done? And that's been really motivating for me. I do hope that in the future, there's like a time when, you know, people who get diagnosed with a rare cancer, we never know if anyone's going to, you know, be able to be fully treated or fully cured, but at least let them have a chance at like a long-term survivorship. And I really hope that there's still a chance that that could happen in my lifetime and that it could help me, but I just want the future to be different for patients like me in the future, because I know when I got diagnosed, what I felt like was, well, if this comes back and it's a non-local recurrence, like I'm pretty much screwed. And so that's kind of still the reality for a lot of these cancers and other common cancers too, of course. And I would like to see improvements and treatments for everybody, of course. It's just that the rare cancers are a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of how much research funding that they're able to get. So that's really motivating. And it's just a cause that is obviously important to me. And I just feel like if I can make any small difference in that area, that would be a good use of my time.
Well, you're actually making an extremely large difference. It's gone a lot farther than a podcast and a tweet. You've created bravelikegabe.org. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. Brave Like Gabe, it's just a way for me to share my story, connect with patients, and do some work on the fundraising side of things and encourage people through wherever they're at in their diagnosis and whether or not they're a rare cancer patient or not, to how they can use running or physical activity for their benefit. And that has helped me so much. So that's just a really important message for me to share. I've been so lucky like you said, I've had a lot of support. And so I have just wanted to try to give that back out into the world and try to make a difference. And I got a chance to, meet a reality TV star in the form of Chip Gaines, Chip and Joanna Gaines. And they have been, that was just like a crazy meeting last year, but they decided to kind of get behind Brave Like Gabe, and they put on a marathon and a half and a 5K for the first time in Waco, Texas in May. Yeah. So that has been like a huge way for us to sort of get out into the world a little bit, but it has been crazy. And I'm very fortunate to have the support that I have. So I'm trying to like really harness that for a good that's way bigger than just me.
And so monumental. So that's,
it sounds kind of ridiculous, but it is powerful.
For those listening, if you want to support the foundation, Brave Like Gabe Foundation, you can find it at bravelikegabe.org. You are just doing such huge things. And as you talk about the foundation, you talk about the cancer, in the back of my mind, I just keep saying, and through it all, she's running. For me, like the hardest thing in the world was actually just going out and getting the runs in. And I had no excuse. And here you are battling cancer, trying to make the most of every single day. And through it all, you're running. And I just, you talk about wanting to inspire and support those out there with these rare cancers, but your mission goes so much farther than that. There are so many people out there, the average John and Janes that can look at what you're doing and saying, I'm making excuses over here of why I can't get my workout in today. Well, Gabe's fighting life-threatening cancer, and she doesn't make any excuses in her days. And I think that if there's anything that we can do, that I can do to get your story out there, it's just truly one of the most inspirational stories that I've ever heard. And I really commend you, Gabe, on the attitude that you walk through life with, the dedication that you have to your sport, to this new foundation, and just to living your life every single day to the fullest.
Well, thank you. And RunGum has been definitely helpful in us getting our little virtual 5K launch. So I appreciate all the support. And, I just think I'm literally just doing my best. And some days I do make excuses, and some days like
it is
hard. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the, I think I would love for people to just, get some perspective from their day and just like kind of keep the major things in their life, the big things, and kind of, we can all use perspective. And if people can get something from my story without actually having to go through what I've gone through, like, that's great. That's ideal, because I do think that if you can every now and then just, look at your life in a different way, it's definitely helpful. And I still do that too, because I know that my situation, as tough as it is, like, I know that there are other people who have it even tougher than me in terms of what they're facing. So I think we can always find new perspective from different places, and I think it can only help us. So I appreciate the support so much, though.
Absolutely. No, I'm reminded of this book I recently read called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Nice.
It's basically saying, we're surrounded by noise, right? And we only have so many fucks to give. And you've got to choose where you're going to put your time and your energy. And it's almost to me like this horrible disease that you're fighting has forced you to say, hey, I only have so much time and energy, and I'm going to choose to spend it with my loved ones. I'm going to choose to spend it on a sport that I love. and I'm going to choose to spend it on a foundation that I'm really passionate about. Would you say that that's an accurate assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with that.
So moving forward, you know, is it doubling down on those three areas? You know, where are we going to see you in the next year or two? You know, is it going to be on the track? Is it going to be raising money for your foundation? Or is it going to be all of the above?
I hope it's both of those things, truly. The days that, like I told you, I've had some untimely injuries. I was hoping to race more this year. So I'm really hoping that there's time for me to race. But anytime that like something gets me off track running wise, I'm kind of like, well, at least I have Brave Like Gabe stuff to work on to, because when I, you know, was just a pro runner, as you know, like when I would have an injury or something, it would just be like the most devastating thing ever. And I didn't really always have something to fill that idle time with. So I am definitely appreciative that I have something meaningful to work on in my free time. And I definitely hope that I can blend both of those together. And I really want to race though. I really don't want to go out of, I would like to kind of get a chance to have a couple good races before I say goodbye to competitive running. I'll always be a runner, but I would love to get, like, my big goal is I'd love to do some racing in 2019, but if I could find some way, this would take like a, you know, the stars aligning for my health with my cancer and just with my body cooperating. But if I could appear at the 2020 Olympic trials, that would be like huge for me. And that would be like very satisfying. So that's what I'm looking
here
for.
Here in our hometown of Eugene, Oregon, we'd welcome you with open arms.
That's right.
This community loves you.
I would love it.
And we can't wait to watch your race again.
Yeah, that's a goal. Well, thank you. I'm working on it.
A little tip for you and other aging runners out there. What I did at the end of my career is I picked events that I'd never ran before because I was guaranteed a PR. So I ran a 3K indoors.
I'm like,
whether I run fast or slow, it's a guaranteed PR. And, you know, the runners got to play some mind tricks with themselves sometimes to get that momentum.
Oh, yeah.
And not that you need any tips from me. You know, you have had such an incredible career and I'm excited to see you race again. If people want to follow you, where can they do that, Gabe?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. I'm GI Grunewald on Instagram and GG_runs on Twitter. Usually I'll be posting updates there. I'm also on Facebook, but I don't quite use that as much as I once did. But yeah, Brave Like Gabe, I'm hoping to also start like a little like Gabe's Corner on that website at bravelikegabe.org, just with some updates about, you know, if I'm doing a speaking engagement or coming to a race or just different things that you can keep up with me there. So
I will. And I know everybody listening will. Gabe, your story is so inspirational. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Best of luck with everything, the foundation and the racing and the cancer. You know, we're sure you're going to kick it all, you know, in the butt because you just had the right attitude, obviously.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the support so much. And hopefully I will see you in person sometime. We can go for a run. Just a couple old people going for a run.
Go easy on me. All right.
I'll try.
All right. Thanks so much for your time, Gabe.
Thanks, Nick. Have a good day.
You too. A big thank you to everyone for joining us on that episode. If you want to find out more or listen to other episodes, go to rungum.com/podcast. Also, please make sure to subscribe on iTunes or your preferred player. I'm Nick Simmons, and you've been listening to the Run the Day podcast. Until next time.